most definitely do this again, and we'll see you guys next week.
WEFT, you're here with me, celebrating a little music. We love to do these things, we love to have that fun. We love to do these things on WEFT. Who knows, this could be the new jingle for WEFT.
Repeat that.
Who knows, this could be new jingle for WEFT.
Straight freestyle.
Freestyle.
WEFT.
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 WEFT. WEFT.
WEFT.
WEFT. WEFT. WEFT.
Prepared for it, yeah.
This hour of programming is brought to you by the Urbana Park District and the listeners of WEFT. Activities scheduled to take place at Urbana Park District indoor facilities have been suspended through December 27th. UPD's outdoor parks are available for use. Please consider a visit to view the new artworks at the Wandel Sculpture Garden. Also, all virtual programming will continue as scheduled. Please visit www.urbanaparks.org for more information.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial, and it's the 13th, I think. Sunday. We're recording on Saturday for rebroadcast on Sunday. Trying to fight with the virus. You got to be careful. Okay, today I want to say something about regional planning. There are a lot of small regional planning shops, and they do things with counties. Sometimes Champaign County does a lot with bicycle trails, but usually in urban settings. It's not the in-between corridors. I want to remind people that are interested in natural areas that we need a regional planning system for East Central Illinois. And we don't have it. We can sometimes have it if there's an urgent situation, like PBC's going into the landfill on top of an aquifer that 80,000 people are drinking from. Then there will be some coordination and regional planning. But once the problem goes, then regional planning has to be very delicate. we're not really supposed to tell people what to do. And that's the problem, because you have people coming from Europe to fantastic soils, good rainfall, and the possibility of developing resources that people have never had. And so they become very individual and very private. If there's a community situation, they'll be there. But basically, the US and South America, for that matter, are very independent places. And you don't bother with regulations that might be avoided. I was inspired to go over to the News Gazette building to get a paper, because apparently in today's Saturday paper there is a note about a mowing between Rantoul and Paxson. It's a very wide corridor, and no mow policies have saved the state a lot of money, but they've also given the roadsides a lot of ambiance. So it's not like driving through corn and soybeans anymore. It's you have some habitat. Well, I found that the News Gazette building has been sold, and there was no newspaper there. So I came back to do my program, and I'm running a little late, but that's okay. We enjoy doing this, and we appreciate the involvement of the Banner Public Television. There is a little bit of difficulty because we're a radio program working with WEFT, and we're not a visual program, but UPTV, public television, is a visual program. So I have to talk to you right now as a visual program as well as a radio program. So I have to be very careful not to talk about pictures that you can't see on the radio. That's the prime mover here. We have been trying to do more of the visual, and we have a link to a trail around the deep depression, the ponds that are on Second Street to preserve water, and that's mostly a visual material, and it wouldn't be possible to extract the radio program out of that. So in the virus era, it's a little bit hard to do both. So you're getting my image, which is okay because you get some verbal contact out of that for the visual side of things, and you get the sound for radio. We have been working at this for years. We started out, I came from Australia. I could not find the native ecosystem, which was prairie, and not very many people knew where it was. It's on old railroad beds, which weren't supposed to be dug up for agriculture. So they have some of the remnants of nature on those railroad beds. I'm sometimes asked, what is a remnant? Well, I say a remnant is something that's been coming back into nature for 10,000 years. It may not contain 100 species. It may just be what's in that particular niche, but it is original. And the railroads were put in linearly, and they didn't do a lot of damage to the right-of-way. The right-of-way is about 100 feet wide. So on either side, we have habitat and preserved dignity for flora and fauna. We cherish that because there's not much left. Jack White, who is a ecologist, has put together the little pieces that the state has preserved, and it's 0.01% of the two-thirds of the state, which was prairie. That's not much. It's, you may want to go off to Africa and save the lions, but your own ecosystem is almost dead, and it's disjunct. So we created a natural area study group, and that went to university natural areas and invited life science botanists and zoologists that were often destined to teaching to have a field experience at Brownfield Woods or Treelease Woods and get some field experience. We had to think about how those people would be asked questions that fall into the category of test and measurement. There's a lot of things that go with doing field work. To some extent, the university is in loco parentis. That means that if you are in charge of students and somebody hits somebody on the head with a stone, and then the university is responsible more or less as a president, as a parent. You also have, if you have 600 people in a large classes, you have to be able to get buses together and get to a field center, which is usually out of town. So there needs to be some organization, but in a way, if you're dealing with education students who will eventually be asked to run their own field trips, they really need that sort of experience. So the Office of Instructional Resources, the Graduate College Committee on Natural Areas, the Curriculum Lab, the Life Sciences, Planning, Landscape Architecture, these people were all interested in us working with media to give people a slightly better idea of where they were and what was their ecosystem and their heritage. We probably work with up to nearly 30 different departments. We might provide a one slide, or we might be asked to be a devil's advocate and sit in a class and ask rude questions that might stimulate interest. We might want to put together a blog or a PowerPoint presentation, but not with the intent of taking over from the professorial teacher, but rather to aid. It would be his program or her program, not our program. So working with a school science curriculum project that provided those sorts of resources, we were pleased to do that. Eventually, as the environmental movement moved in, it was gradually having an environmental day. It had environmental issues around town. It had an environmental studies program with people conscripted from various departments. It wasn't a department in its own right. I assume it is now an individual department, but this was putting things together, and we were asked to be party to a proposal for a $3 million grant to encourage environmental education. So our name was changed to Educational Resources in Environmental Science, which is a long name with ERES as its acronym, but nobody can remember the name. So, but it's fit the purpose, and the application was made, and we didn't get the grant, but we got an elevation in status so that we got to not only work with students and student classes, whether it be natural areas or man-made situations like historic buildings. We were involved not only with the university, but also with extension and work outside the university. After a number of years, we got game and ran a prairie conference at Mahomet. And that was interesting. And it gave a lot of people a chance to look at their own heritage. After that, we were ready to install a group of people to be advocates for Prairie. It got called the Grand Prairie Friends. And so about 10 years of work went into establishing that and getting it underway. We didn't occupy a place on the board because we felt like we wanted to create an organization where we didn't breathe down the organization's neck with a little bit of information that we had. So that's been very successful. We did get, I probably walked 100 miles looking for excellent prairie along abandoning and active railroad lines. And we chose a little piece east of Gifford, which became the first plot of land owned by the Grand Prairie Friends. And gradually they have done very well over the years. They, unfortunately, from my point of view, took on forest preservation because it's about 100 times harder to do prairie preservation because there is none and there's no provision for some. If you're dealing with forests, you can hug a tree and people have land along awkward acreages, along rivers. And in Urbana, there was a 10 square mile plot of prairie. Sometimes it's for forest. Sometimes it's on a moraine, which is drained. The trees that find their way into preservation along riparian or watercourses usually like the water, but they don't like to be drowned. So they find their way onto drained moraines from time to time. And they can be very, fairly biodiverse in original nature. There may be 13 different trees represented by those sorts of forests. But the forests that replace a prairie are usually more likely to be invasive trees that take advantage. If you have a prairie, if it is in nature, it gets burned every once in a while by lightning strike. If you add to that the native population, which realizes that this improves the prairie, then they can do things like make a horseshoe burn and catch animals as they come out of the entrance to the burn. So we have a tendency to let the forests move out into the prairies. And sometimes it's very well documented at Allerton Park, for instance, where there was a substantial piece of agricultural ground which was put into prairie. There was a research thing by Dr. Hoffman to Hoffmeister to see how quickly forest would advance into the prairie if it were not burned. And it would be burned periodically, and so then the prairie advances. You can create a prairie by planting it. You can even create an arboretum by planting a lot of different prairie plants, which attracts prairie animals. But as far as remnant prairie goes, very little. Outside Allerton Park, for instance, there's a good railroad bed which has the elements of remnant. And alongside it, the university has established a 1 mile by 66 feet replication of a prairie where plants have been planted and grasses have been sown. And after about 10 years or 12 years, it's beginning to look like a prairie, and the intent there was to encourage native species. Now, back to how we do that, how we encourage Grand Prairie Friends, how they go off to other agencies or other missions, which include forest, and gather up donations and become very successful. But I'm about to ask if those that organization, Grand Prairie Friends, could go back to being prairie advocates, because there are a number of things that not being attended to that need the advocacy that we established. One of them is between Paris and Decatur. There was a 30-mile segment there. We convinced the Department of Natural Resources to buy it, but they bought it so late that 11 plots had been already sold, and no one was going to give them back to the Department of Natural Resources to run a trail. And trail would be the name of the game. Unfortunately, recreation dominates preservation. So if you're looking for preservation, you have to step lightly, because the major interest is in recreation. A big, wide trail, ADA people like it because they're off the roads. The EPA people like it because they can put 8 inches of gravel on top of the ballast and then down the sides. And in doing both those things, their wideness for ADA, American Disabilities Association, and EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, they're both happy with wide trails, but biologists in general are not so happy, because it means you have a fairly sterile corridor without much habitat on either side, and lots of corn and soybeans that you could see just going along the road. Unfortunately, between Abana and St. Joe, there was a lot of ecological material eliminated. Early on, when we had early ecologists, Vestal and Kendi and one other, I'm forgetting the name, but and people, Coles, who was an early ecologist in the Lake Michigan area, his daughter would come down here. And one of the prime places where they would used to go was between Urbana and Mayview. That segment of prairie has now been dissipated partially by road widening and partially by trail widening. There is a interurban corridor alongside, which could be very helpful because it's also fairly original soil. And even if we don't get the prairie plants, we get the soils. And they're complex and they have all sorts of organisms in them and we don't know much about it. And so that's prime research territory. So right this day, we have a number of issues. One is the sort of rail corridor between Paris and Decatur, which has on it elements of good prairie preservation. We have a trail from Rantoul to Paxton, which is loaded with prairie. It's not the world's greatest, but it's all we have. And that's inspired a newspaper article, apparently, in this morning's paper, because it's been mown. And mowing is okay. We can use mowing as a tool, but if you mow before the plant has flowered and seeds, then you're going to lose that plant. And the biologists know this, and apparently someone has observed the mowing in that area. On the Kickapoo Trail, which is now drawing somewhere in the vicinity of $20 million for development, that's a little frightening if you're thinking it's being taken out of your pocket. But when you take that and divide it into all the people that use it over 100 years, then the cost per head is very low. The whole point of that is to have bicyclists and hikers and biologists use the corridor interimly. And in so doing, they preserve the dignity of the right-of-way so that if a train wants to come back in to a factory that might be somewhere along that corridor, that can happen. It's taken 20 years to get it underway. We took out the details with the Surface Transportation Board, and when no one else would do it, Heartland Pathways did that. That's another organization we've put together. And but then people began to realize that it could be a wonderful idea. Unfortunately, the people who took over didn't get the money that was needed to buy the line. So that went to the CSX Railroad Organization, which had the same thing in mind. And they can do that. They can put it into an interim trail use. And eventually they were convinced to do that. And after 20 years of the trail sitting vacant, it has come back to be a formal trail. The trail is being developed in pieces, 7 miles from Urbana to St. Joe, about 3 miles in the area of Oakwood. And then I think this summer, the bridge over the Salt Fork, not the Salt Fork, the Middle Fork of the Vermilion will be in action. The idea is to prefabricate fences on either side. So you bring a prefabricated unit and put it down and bolt it or anchor it to the the underlying beams, I-beams, and it has overhanging areas so people can't climb out and hurt themselves on the bridge that is 100 feet tall. So we need people who can get together to say, now this is regional territory. This is in Vermilion County, but the people who use it are often from Champaign-Urbana. Then how can we put together an organization to promote this? And it's not the sort of organization that involves 100 volunteers. We don't have those sorts of jobs. What we need is the lawyers and engineers and biologists who know their territory, who know the plants, and to some extent they can, if they're going to be wasted, they can be dug up and salvaged and taken to a forest preserve situation. And in some places, the plants really do remain. But if they're a remnant that's been mown, they look rather daggy. And there's a temptation to put modern seed into those areas. And we don't really appreciate that, because that's dealing with what is basically a remnant. But these opinions are there. When we go to Vermilion County, we're heavy in canoeing, and early settlement came up the river corridors with canoes, especially in flood time when it was deep enough to do that. So settlement was along the rivers, and if you grew corn, you had a grist mill. Grist mills would take advantage of a gooseneck, and they would cut across so that they would create a lower a flow of water to a grist mill, which was a water run by water, and that was a functional way of grinding your product. But it's also rather difficult, because those cutoffs that provided the water to fall on a grist wheel would be affected by flooding and by fire. And so there's a number of grist mills along those corridors. If you want to think about the Vermilion County water system, it runs into Indiana. If you put your hand up and you look at the back of your hand, if you put down your little finger, that represents the Ombra. That's one river. It's different. Then your other three fingers, the Salt Fork, the Middle Fork, and the North Fork, and your thumb is the Vermilion River that runs all those rivers into the Wabash and down the Ohio to the Mississippi and to the Gulf. So let me run through that again. Hold your hand up. Little finger is the Ombra. The three digits are Salt Fork, Middle Fork, North Fork, and your thumb is the Vermilion. So we have history over there. We have geology. We have sedimentary rocks that have squashed vegetation in the past, the Carboniferous era. You would have that vegetation squashed too cold. And so Danville attracted people from other places where there were coal people. There is a little bridge south of St. Joe, which is called the Shake Rag. And that goes back to Wales, where the wives would know where the miners were. They may not have been too far underground, and they would shake a rag and it was time to come back for lunch. So Shake Rag down near Shake Rag Bridge near Sydney would probably indicate a history of Welsh miners coming to Danville. And early strip mining was there. There was deep mining and then strip mining. And so a lot of the area in Danville has been put into ridges. It's like plowing and constantly plowing. Each time you plow, you have a new vein of coal. Those furrows have been planted to trees, and they're growing back as quasi-natural areas, but it's still rather invaded. So not as natural, for instance, as Allerton Park, but you do have history. You have railroading that came in. It followed canals, and we've been talking about canals, the Hennepin Canal and the Michigan Canal, and how you could combine the lakes and the Illinois River. The Vermilion County didn't come into that era. Probably you first settled 1820s. There was one attempt at putting in a lock and dam, but people who wanted to boat up the Vermilion River didn't like a dam. So the industry that there was using a water wheel placated the concern by putting in a small lock and dam. But the era of canals had dried up and railroads were taking the place. Many of those railroads in places like Grape Creek have been abandoned, and their corridors remain relatively accessible and available for biology and a little bit of history at the same time. Sometimes they're on flat land that is not occupied very much for any crop facility. So, okay, you have something in the Vermilion County area. Then if you go to McLean County and DeWitt County, you have the potential for a rail trail between Bloomington and Farmer City and eventually to Champaign, we hope. So you have these various things that are happening in East Central Illinois, even Central Illinois. Bloomington is more in the center. But then you have the opportunity to perhaps one day be able to ride into Decatur. Decatur has good trails around Decatur itself, but you have to get there. And but there is an old highway which has been replaced by a superhighway, Interstate 72. So the old highway is wide enough to be a shared road and have traffic as well as bicycles and hikes. And there outside Allerton, we have as part of Heartland Pathways, a possibility of a trail through our railroad right-of-way prairie. And we have perhaps a cooperative venture of a power company putting in a 5-inch gas line through from Monticello to Cisco. So you have to think about these sorts of issues. At White Heath, we have a Shady Rest Parkway, which was planted for it to be a town, but that never happened. And It's a natural area which is now in the DePuyette County Forest Preserve, but it has a railroad going through it, and that railroad goes all the way to Clinton. And so it goes from Lodge to DeLand to Weldon to Lane and on into past Weldon State Park and Clinton Power Plant Lake. And 5 miles of that corridor could join two state parks that are heavily used. And then there's all the ecology that is associated with taking a rail bed across the truss bridge over the Salt Creek there. Once again, you have towns about 5 miles apart that have a history of their own. They may have been some miles away from the railroad line, but when a railroad line goes through and you have a financial opportunity, you might just move your train, move your town to the railroad line. So looking at this, we do have Prairie Rivers interested in the river areas. If it's in the east of Urbana, it's the Salt Fork, Middle Fork, the North Fork, and the Vermilion. If it's in the west, it's the Ombra, which also flows into the Wabash, but then the Sangamon and the Kaskaskia, which run into to the Illinois River. So we have river documentation, but it's also as loose as a goose as far as regulations are concerned, and who takes water and does what with it, whether it's used for cleaning coal or other uses. So we really have a challenge to work with water and water legalities. But at the same time, you also have to realize that most people are going to get to these places. Early on, they would go by horse and cart, and they couldn't go more than 15 miles because that's about as far as the horse could go. But as cars came in, so you could go further. But cars also need car access, and we have to think about that. We're in the process of re-railing 4 miles of land between White Heath and Seymour. And then we would like to buy Borroberga Steel, 7 miles of railroad bed where the rail is intact. And the whole intent is to get historic trains from the Monticello Railroad Museum into Champaign. A major task, but looking at all these things put together, you're wanting a regional planning office where there is a CEO and lawyers and people who can look at the region. I don't know whether we can ever do that, because Jason Liggett just says, if you're going to do regional planning, you have to step very carefully, or you're thought to be controlling people, and then you don't get voted to do things. So there's been about 10 attempts, often from the Natural History Survey, and to combine all these organizations that do interesting things. We've lost the Isaac Walton League, but there's a Audubon and the Sierra Club, and all these have their own interests. Some are interested in preserving eyeglasses, for instance, but they have a general interest. You have Pheasants Forever. getting them all together is like herding cats. And so we've had about 10 attempts to do that. And we have people who write textbooks that combine all these issues, but we really need someone who thinks about prairie and is an advocate for prairie and will go to the state and federal government to make sure we don't lose the last little pieces of ecology that we have. They're not pristine, they're not original, but they the best we have. And the citizenry needs to know that this is there. So you have an educational element. You have a workday element. Some of these plots, like at Coles County and the acquisitions around there, are attracting a lot of volunteers, which eventually end up providing you with some of the workforce that you need. That there are educational processes where people are being asked to read webinars that help to give individual people the ability to know themselves, first of all. What do they want to do? Do they want to help with this sort of thing? Then to tell them what they might have to be involved with if they get to be a serious volunteer or an employee. There's paperwork and details that need to be looked at. And then you need examples. You need that corridor from Rantoul to Paxton to demonstrate that we could have ecotourism from Kankakee to Rantoul and get it off 72, off 57 and back onto 57 at a later date. And we need innovative people who are prepared to say, hey, take this country road east or west. It goes past a landfill. The landfill is interesting because it's on the top of a hill and it leaches down the hill to other places. And it has to be capped with dirt and no longer used on top of the hill. But it's a place where you could have prairie. Where you can look over the landscape and actually see that you're higher than the land around you. There's swamp lands that don't grow anything at the moment, could be filled with 250 million tons of soil and made into a town extension, but it would be nice to have that area representative of having wetland like it was in places like Flatville and then going up the Bloomington Moraine. So you have niches for modestly wet appreciating plants and animals up onto the top of the hill and then dry area species like little bluestem and then gradually rolling back to an outwash Plain Creek, which probably ends up in the Middle Fork River. How in the devil do we get people together from all these different groups to have some uniform concern? They're all going to have their own mission, but if we're clever enough, we can get people to all those organizations to have perhaps 2% of their mission in lockstep. Not easy. It has to happen at the state level. Here it has happened with a student of early ecology named George Fell, and he was at the U of I, and he took off to Washington and bought a house, and he and his wife worked on establishing what would eventually be the Nature Conservancy, which is now worldwide. They bought presses and they established the Nature Conservancy, but they also established subunits in different states and different cities. Eventually, George had a committee, probably hand-picked by George, but they wanted to do things with a particular site. They wanted to do things with the Outer Banks of Long Island. And George was wanting to have chapters in the state. So George retired from there, came back to Illinois and worked for 20 odd years at Illinois to facilitate one, research, to have a Natural Areas Institute, and to create, first of all, a forest preserve, which got a little bit polluted from the mission of preservation in an interpretation into recreation. So the forest preserve has more responsibility for recreation. That's a political move, and that's part of what I'm talking about. Regional planning is a political cat. It has to be very careful not to be denied by being too political, but it's this is moving about in the state and federal quarters and establishing itself and doing more than just working with cities or urban situations. We need the connectivity across the state. So George then put together a nature preserves, and Vermilion County is a conservation district, or Vermilion County Preservation Commission. And it has more authority to preserve, and it happens to be in rolling territory, geological territory, strip mine territory, which has allowed it to function fairly well. And back to the responsibility, Champaign-Urbana is a center that's using these territory, whether it's to the south to go to Colt County, to Warbler Woods, or to Decatur, to Bloomington, to Paxton, or Loder, or Kankakee, or east to Kickapoo State Park, and to into Indiana. All these sites deserve some overall look, and somebody who is a CEO that's paid a reasonable amount to look at these territories and find out how they interact. For instance, a trail between Paxton and Rantoul could butt up against an east-west pumpkin vine corridor. It's only 3 miles long, but it augments the north-south area. The concept of mowing and not mowing needs to have advocates, because people are used to having crystal clean highways, and they get very upset when habitat moves down towards the road. So, and the people who are used to mowing, it's their job, and if there's no mow policies put on there, then they're going to face the loss of jobs. So the person who coordinates this has to be a rather clever person to work with a lot of different paradigms. So that sort of person deserves to be paid a reasonable amount of money to do this work. Some people will do it in volunteer manner, whether or no, but the money helps. Money helps to bring forth little plots of land that should be preserved, or it allows some thinking about media, for instance. How do we tell young people about what they may preserve or may lose for their grandchildren? Because if the way it's going, they won't have much left of nature for their grandchildren. How do we do this? I don't know. You have to keep trying. And if it doesn't work in one direction, you try in another. And writing is helpful. I've been reading a book by Daniel McCollum and Jim Smith. And it's on the canoeing of the three rivers that I'm talking about, the Salt Fork, the Middle Fork, and the North Fork. All those rivers have their roots in wetlands that you could never canoe, but in Ford County in Indiana and in Illinois, the Sangamon has its roots up there too. So how do young people know about this? How are they involved at the university level where they learn how to be teachers? I'm going to be cautious because sometimes I run over. So I think I'm going to say thank you for listening. Before I go, I want to say something about meetings by Zoom. I've been to meetings by CCDC, the Champaign County Conservation District, and the Sierra Club, and both those groups had a rather exciting discussions, and it included topics like at the Sierra Club meeting. It was about glass. We're getting to have put sand into monumental buildings, and there's very little sand left. Yet the people who collect glass bottles are not excited to take them to Streeter to recycle. So there's... So that's my point at which I want to leave, but I find that getting together in Zoom is quite positive, and it's one of the ways of interacting with each other. So this is Dave Monk, the Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
Listening to the radio station where the mighty host of heaven sing.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of the endless spring.
Hi, this is Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, and you're listening to 90.1 FM Champaign, WEFT.
And this hour of programming is brought to you by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts and the listeners of WEFT. Krannert Center for the Performing Arts has announced the cancellation of all spring 2021 public in-person performances. Krannert Center thanks you for your steadfast support and invites you to visit krannertcenter.com for updates on virtual programming and other news.
Immigrant COVID resources. The University YMCA is offering programs and service to meet community needs despite the need for social distancing. In response to the unique challenges facing the immigrant community, the New American Welcome Center at the University YMCA has created a special COVID-19 edition of its Immigrant Resource Guide to both guide organizations who work with immigrants and also to equip immigrant allies and advocates who are looking for ways to stay engaged. The Welcome Center has also expanded eligibility for its Immigrant Relief Fund. The Y's ongoing commitment to the leadership development, community engagement, and academic progress of students has also led to the creation of an emergency aid fund for Bailey scholars who are experiencing financial hardship as a result of the outbreak due to business closures or relocation. You can access the WISE Immigrant Resources for COVID document at tinyurl.com/CU Immigrant COVID. Again, that is T-I-N-Y.